Sorry. After this, Jesus went about in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the Jewish feast of booths was at hand. So his brothers said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples also might see the works you are doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I'm not going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come." After saying this, he remained in Galilee. But after his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he also went up, not publicly, but in private. The Jews were looking for him at the feast and saying, "Where is he?" And there was much muttering about him among the people. While some said, "He is a good man," others said, "No, he is leading the people astray." Yet for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly of him. About the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and began teaching. The Jews therefore marveled, saying, "How is it that this man has learning when he has never studied?" So Jesus answered them, "My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory. But the one who seeks the glory of him who sent me, glory of him who sent is true, and in him there is no falsehood. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keeps the law. Why do you seek to kill me?" The crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who's seeking to kill you?" Jesus answered them, "I did one work, and you all marveled at it. Moses gave you circumcision, not that it was from Moses, but from the fathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well? Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment."
A button here somewhere. Hey, cool. Well, welcome everyone, and great to see you. And as we've been doing for a while, we're going through John's Gospel. And so today, this evening, we're in John chapter 7 in the passage that was read for us. And look what Jesus says at the end there: "Don't judge by appearances, judge with right judgment." So we got communion tonight. It's the first Sunday of the month. So don't judge it by that chair over there. All our stuff got stolen. And so we're skinny on the music, and we're skinny on communion as well. We used to have a pretty table. So don't judge by appearances. Judge with right judgment. All right, let's pray, and we're going to look at this passage together. Lord Jesus, please shake us up. We live in an age of entertainment. Everything's got to be a rock concert. Everything's got to be pixels on a computer screen. We need to be entertained. But here is a whole bunch of words. So will you help us to switch our brains on? Help us to worship you with our hearts, with our bodies, but also with our minds. Help us to think now about the deep truths of Jesus written here for us. Speak, Lord. Amen. Okay, now, if you know my preaching, you'll know, I say this often, I don't like to start with a joke, although I'm a pretty funny guy. I don't usually start with a joke, because I think what we deal with when we teach the Bible are deep, weighty things, and I don't want to make them frivolous. But tonight, I'm going to start with a joke. Here comes a joke. It's probably an old one, so you probably all know it. But you will see why I'm telling this joke, because it goes directly to our passage. You're going to see why I tell this joke. So here's the joke. Right, there's the simple farmer. And there he stands. Can you see the farmer? And what do farmers do? He's leaning on his post, looking at the countryside. He's chewing on a piece of straw. That's what farmers do. And he's watching all his sheep on the fields, lots and lots of sheep. And as he stands there in his dungarees, leaning on his post, chewing his straw, up the sand road is a cloud of dust. And first you just hear the doof, 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 doof. And up comes the shiny BMW, totally out of place. It comes screeching to a halt, cloud of dust, music blaring, and this dude steps out. And he is the yuppie of yuppies. Custom-made designer suit, you know, I don't know all the names. Giorgio Armani, is that a cool name? Ray-Ban sunglasses, I don't know. Rolex watch, yuppie of yuppies. Anyway, gets out his car, and he looks patronizingly at this dungareed farmer. And he says to him, "Yo, buddy, that's quite a lot of sheep you got out there." And the farmer says, "Air gun, mate." You know, because that's what farmers do. "Air gun, mate." And he says, "Oh, well, it's a bit cold. Hey, listen, mate, I know who you are. You're just a simple farmer, you know. And I know what you're trying to do, grow your business, you know, and I can help you. Tell you what, if I tell you how many sheep you've got, right, will you give me one of them?" So the farmer thinks, fair enough. So he whips out his MacBook Air, because, you know, if you do Apple, you're a wannabe. So he's got his MacBook Air, hotspots to his gold iPhone 14, you know. Google searches Google Earth or whatever, opens up Excel spreadsheet. If you can do Excel, you're a yuppie. There's all these like statistical formulas. He does the, you know, that thing that says, "Don't talk, I'm thinking." You know, that thing. And then triumphantly he says, 1,562 sheep. Impressive, eh? Farmer doesn't say anything. "Well, I'll just help myself to one then." Anyway, so he grabs an animal and he starts shoving it into the poor thing, into the boot of his BMW. And Bruce speaks, obviously it's Bruce, because he's a farmer. And so Bruce speaks up and he says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. How about if I tell you what you do for a living, you give me my animal back?" So the yuppie thinks, well, he's going to say lawyer, obviously. So he's, okay, go. So Bruce says to him, "You're a consultant." "Whoa," says the yuppie. "Yeah, that's right. How did you know? How did you guess?" "I've got four reasons," says Bruce. "Number one, you came here when nobody invited you. Number one. Number two, you overcharged me for 5 minutes work. Number three, you didn't tell me anything that I didn't already know. And number four, you don't know what you're talking about. So can I have my dog back, please?" Okay. Now, our passage, Dwayne, what's the joke for? Our passage starts with self-appointed consultants. They don't know who Jesus is. They think they do. They don't know what Jesus is trying to do. They think they do. And worst of all, they think they know how Jesus should go about doing what he's trying to do. They got heaps of advice for him. And they're wrong on everything. Look at verse 1 to 5. After this, Jesus went around in Galilee. Galilee, you must know it's like Yangtze. Galilee is country bumpkinville, okay? He's going around in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea, Judea, okay? He would not go around in Judea because that's the city, that's Jerusalem, because the Jews were trying to kill him. Now, the Jewish Feast of Booths was at hand. So watch the consultants. So his brother said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples may see the works you're doing. No one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. Can you see the consultants? What the consultants say is, look, Jesus, you want to win the world, right? You want to make a name for yourself. Here's what you must do. Stop messing around in Yanchep. Go to the city. Go where it's happening. Jerusalem is the place you want to be, and it's the right time. Here's why. Because it's the Jewish Feast of Booths. And folks, that's the biggest Jewish festival, bigger than what we had in Joondalup. Shout Out or Loud Out or Music Out. I got it for free because I live in Joondalup, so I heard the whole thing for free. Anyway, through my earplugs, I heard the whole thing for free. Anyway, but it's bigger than that. It's huge. Tens and hundreds of thousands of people come to Jerusalem from all over the world for this festival. It's huge. And so what they say to Jesus is, go down there. You'll win the crowds. Hey, and that's not our only advice. Here's our best advice. Do more miracles, because that stuff works. Go do miracles. Then you will really win the world. Look at verse 3. Leave here, go to Jerusalem, listen, that your disciples may see the works you're doing. Go and do more of that crazy stuff. Look at verse 4. Show yourself to the world. Now, you might be sitting there. If you've got brothers, you're thinking, well, all brothers are stupid, you know, if you have brothers. But before you think that, and before you think these consultants are out of line, be honest. How many times have you appointed yourself as a consultant to Jesus? How many times have you said something like this? Why doesn't Jesus do this? What are you doing? You're acting like a consultant. Or how about if I was Jesus, you know what I would do? You're appointing yourself as a consultant. What would you, think about it. What would you want Jesus to do? Think about ECU. Huh? Think about the northern suburbs. What do you think Jesus should do? How would you change things? What do you think he should do? Imagine if he appeared on a stage and did a miracle, levitated. Do you think people would believe him? Maybe just appearing. Look at verse 4. No one works in secret, Jesus. You know this idea of a little uni church and then someone opens the Bible? That's a little bit secret. Don't you want to be known openly? If you do these things, show yourself to the world. Don't you often think, you know, imagine if Jesus just appeared, just showed himself to the world. Everyone would believe. Do you think that's good advice? Do you think that's good advice? No, it won't work. It won't work. Jesus knows what he's doing. Miracles are a bad strategy. Miracles do not make people believe in Jesus. If you've been with us, you know that in John chapter 6, Jesus has just fed thousands of people with 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish, and they walked away from him at the end of chapter 6. Miracles don't work. What about his brothers? Look at verse 5. Not even his brothers believed in him, but they've seen his miracles. Miracles don't work. Not a good strategy. Bad advice. Now here's the question. Why don't they work? Why don't they work? Well, the most important thing in this passage comes back to our joke. The plain fact of the joke, and I'm going to explain it for Danny. So Danny, the reason the joke was funny, right, is because the guy put a dog in the car, because he wouldn't have got it. The guy put a dog in the car. It wasn't a sheep. He didn't know what he's talking about. People do not know the sheep from the dogs. The truth of the matter is we underestimate people. Jesus knows people. He knows what's in the heart of people. We don't know people like Jesus knows people. We think we know people. We think that they just need a little nudge. We think if Jesus just did a cool trick, they would become Christians. Jesus says, they won't, because I know them. We underestimate the sheep. And then Jesus says something shocking. Jesus doesn't say that the world doesn't believe in me. He does say that, but he says it's worse. Look at that line there in verse 6. Jesus said to them, my time has not come. Your time's always here. You're having the time of your life. But look at verse 7. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me. Now, whoa. Those are heavy words. Jesus is saying the world doesn't just not believe in me. The world hates me. The world actually hates me. Look at what it says, because I testify that its works are evil. You go to the feast. I'm not going to the feast. My time has not yet fully come. And he remained in Galilee. Now, look at it again. The world hates me. Do you think Jesus is overstating it? Do you think he's got a persecution complex? Don't you want to say to Jesus, Australians are polite. I think they just find you irrelevant. You're not as fun as a jet ski. But I wouldn't say that they hate you. Would you like to consult to Jesus? Jesus says no. Jesus says the world hates him. And that's why tonight we're going to look at the hated. That's the whole wrong PowerPoint. This is going to hurt me big time. Oh, this is going to get me deep. Well, I'm going to carry on, but the PowerPoint is the one from last week, the see the hated God. So pay no attention to this. Hear me. In fact, I don't even know if we need this because the points are quite simple. Here's what Jesus is saying. The world hates me, and I want to prove it to you. You might think I'm exaggerating, but I reckon if Jesus had to come into the world, he'd probably end up being crucified. Yes, that's exactly what happened, because they hate him. And why does the world hate him? Look what he says in verse 7. The world cannot hate you. It hates me. Why? Because I testify about it that its works are evil. Folks, you have to take this on board. Jesus exposes our hearts. In fact, let me put it this way. Jesus is not world affirming. Jesus is world exposing. Jesus is not world affirming. Jesus is world exposing. See, that's why everybody likes Buddha. Because Buddha doesn't tell you you're evil. Some people don't like Muhammad, but he says you're a mixture of good and evil. You're not like evil, you're like a mixture. Everybody loves the Dalai Lama. Everybody. They all got posters of the Dalai Lama. Because he thinks you're good. He says you're good. Jesus says you're evil. No wonder the guy's unpopular. No wonder. And he shows us that we hate him in three ways. Three ways. Are you ready for this? Number one, people hate Jesus because they love themselves. People hate Jesus because they love themselves. Look at verse 10 to verse 13. But after his brothers had gone up to the feast, then Jesus went up, not publicly, but in private. The Jews were looking for him at the feast and saying, where is he? And there was much muttering about him among the people. Some said, he's a good man. Others said, no, he's leading the people astray. Yet, for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly of him. The way we hate Jesus is that we love ourselves first. The reason these people didn't understand who Jesus was because they were afraid of what other people think. Look at what it says there. Verse 13, yet for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly of him. People were pressured. People were scared of what people think. Now, why are you scared of what people think of you? Because they're not going to stab you. They're not going to beat you. Is because you love yourself. I'm busy building my reputation. I want people to like me. I want people to think well of me. I want people to think I'm clever. I want people to think I'm open-minded. I want people to be angry with me. If I say that Jesus Christ is the real king and he rules everything, people will laugh at me. If I'm at work and I say, actually, what Jesus says is true, well, everyone will tease me. If I say things like this, I'll give you an actual example. If I say, God is not against homosexual people, God is not against gay people, but God says that marriage is only for a husband and a wife, and that sex should only happen between a married man and a woman, then Bill Shorten will say, I've crawled out from under a rock, which is exactly what he said 2 weeks ago. And so you know what I'll do? I love my reputation. I love me. And so I'm just going to keep my opinions about Jesus to myself. And that's what verse 13 is. Yet for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly about Jesus. My Christianity is a private thing. Now the reason we do that is because we love ourselves, not Jesus. Is your faith in Jesus a secret? See, I have got a new master. My master is called Dwayne, and I want the world to think he's awesome. That's my project in life. My project in life is to make the world think that Dwayne is awesome. He's my master. And Jesus says you can't serve two masters. You're going to love the one or you're going to hate the other. And so if you love yourself, then you hate Jesus. That's what this passage is teaching us. Jesus said, and I quote, whoever would be my disciple must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now, did you hear take up his cross? Christians think that means put up with your sore toe. That's not what take up the cross means. No one would say take up your electric chair and walk. The cross is an execution symbol. It means death. When Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, he's saying, die. You must die. Jesus says to Dwayne, Dwayne, you must die if you want to follow me. You will spend your life promoting yourself or promoting Jesus. Let me put it to you another way. Look at verse 7 again. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me. Where's the risk? Here's the risk. If you follow Jesus, you will get hated too. That's the risk. See, the consultants were wrong. They didn't understand. Jesus is not trying to be popular. He's not trying to win the world's approval. Jesus has come to convict the world of sin, not win its approval. And to what he's come to do is to call people out of the world, to die to themselves and to follow him. And when they do that, they will end up being hated by the world. Listen to this text. Listen carefully. If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. So look what he says to his brothers there. The world can't hate you because you're of the world. Now, John 15, but because you're not of the world, he's talking to his followers, I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Friends, pick a winning side. You're either going to win the world's approval or you are going to seek his approval and be hated by the world. Now, the consultants think that's a bad idea. The consultants think that's an awful idea. But Jesus is very clear. The world hates me because I testify about it that its works are evil. Now, I want to say to Jesus, if I was Jesus' consultant, I would say to him, you carry on talking like that, mate, you're going to end up being crucified. And that's exactly what happens. Have you ever realized no other religious leader has come to such a sticky end like Jesus did? Because he's not world-affirming. He's world confronting. So the first way people hate Jesus is because they love themselves. The second way people hate Jesus is because they want to rule themselves. Look with me from verse 14. About the middle of the feast, okay, Jesus went up into the temple and he began teaching. The Jews marveled, saying, "How is it that this man has learning when he's never studied?" So Jesus answered them, "My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority." You know, I figured out why Buddhism and New Age and the Dalai Lama are so popular in the West. Do you know why they're so popular? Because they don't demand anything from you. They don't demand anything of you. Jesus demands everything. Look with me. Look what he says. Verse 14. He goes up and he starts teaching. Now the Jews marvel and say, "How's this man? He's got no learning. He's never studied." What do they mean by that? They don't mean poor guy. He's just a carpenter. He's a tradie. And he's trying to give public lectures and he's a tradie. That's not what they mean. What they mean is, in their culture, you went and studied at a well-known school. I can give you some names. There was a rabbi called Hillel. There was a rabbi called Gamaliel. And usually when you taught, you go like this. You put your fingers together. No, I don't know if that's true. But what you do is you quote, "As Rabbi Hillel says, blah, blah, blah. As Gamaliel says," you quote your teacher. That's how you taught. But Jesus stands up and he's never come from any one of their schools. He just says, I tell you. He speaks from himself with his own authority. Truly, truly, I say to you. But worse, look in verse 16. He says, "Whatever I say is what God says." Look what he says in verse 16. So Jesus answered them, "My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me." It's a huge claim. Jesus is saying, whatever I teach, whatever I say, is what God says. It's what God teaches. It's a huge claim. Now, if that is true, okay, everyone, you need to concentrate now. If that is true, if Jesus' words are God's words, what is the main reason people don't believe? If Jesus speaks God's words, why don't people believe? And it's there for you in verse 17. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm just making it up. Now, this is so important. That's what I mean by hating Jesus because you want to rule yourself. What Jesus is saying is if you really, really were happy to stop ruling yourself, if you were keen to do God's will, look what he says. If anyone's will is to do God's will, if you go, "God, I will do whatever you say," if you were like that, you would know that Jesus came from God. If you would lay down your will, then you would know that Jesus is true. If you were prepared to let God rule your life, you would know that Jesus is true. See, here it is. People, God. It's not a clash of brains. It's not a clash of intellect. People don't not believe in God because of Noah's Ark. People don't not believe in God because where did Cain get his wife from? That's not why people don't believe in God. They clash because of wills. God's got a will. I've got my own will. That's what Jesus is saying. Let me show you how it works, because it happens all the time. Someone will say this: "I'm open-minded. I lay aside my prejudices. I've got an open mind. I'm open to hearing about Jesus. I'm cool with that. Hey, maybe this book is historically accurate. I'm cool with that. Hey, okay. Maybe I got that wrong about Jesus. Wow, yeah, that's interesting. Ooh, I didn't know Jesus said that. Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, what? Jesus wants to tell me what to do with my sex life? Oh, no, where did Cain get his wife from? You got put off because you suddenly realize that Jesus wants to, hear this, impose his will on your life. That's the problem with Jesus. That's why people hate Jesus. They don't hate him for any other reason than that he wants to impose his will on our will. Look at what Jesus says. If anyone's will is to do God's will, then he would know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm making it up, speaking in my own authority. And the temptation for us as a church, the temptation for me, and I'm telling you this is true, but I'm not the only one, any preacher, is to try and soften what Jesus says. You know what? I was thinking this morning as I was preaching this morning, you know, that crowd of people there, I'd love to just make them happy so they come again. Be so easy, you know? Because if I just, and yet, Jesus says, but if they want to know and do God's will, then they will hear my word. The truth of the matter is, Jesus is not trying to win the world's approval. Look at verse 18. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory. But the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true. And in him, there's no falsehood. What's Jesus saying? He's saying, I'm not trying to seek my own glory. I'm not trying to seek my fame and fortune. I'm not trying to make you guys approve of me. Did you hear that? Oh, that's a hard thing to say, but that's what he says. I don't need your mum and your dad to approve of me. That's what Jesus is saying. I don't need your friends to approve of me. I don't need you to approve of me. Look what he says in verse 18. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory. I'm not seeking my own glory, says Jesus. But the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true. Jesus says, my words are true, because I only seek the approval of the one who sent me. But if you're willing to lay down your will, if you're willing to seek God's approval, not the approval of your friends, if you're willing to seek God's approval, you will know that Jesus tells the truth. Even the parts you don't like, even the parts that clash against your own will. You know, your gospel, your message, does it confront people or does it affirm people? It's worth checking out. Jesus' message confronted people. But Jesus is not going to change. The second reason people hate Jesus is because they want to rule themselves. But thirdly and finally, the third reason people hate Jesus is because they want him to conform to their morals. Did you hear me? The reason people hate Jesus, the way they hate him, is they want him to conform to their morals. They want Jesus to fit into their moral code. I remember someone, not a Christian, came to one of our search courses, and she said this to me. Hey, you know, actually, she didn't come to a search course. That's not true, because she didn't want to come, but I remember telling her about Jesus. Anyway, she said this to me. Hey, I share Jesus' values. I don't need to come to church. I don't need to call myself a Christian, because I share Jesus' values. Really? Do you know what she really was saying? She didn't know it, but you know what she was saying? I share Jesus' values as long as he agrees with my values. That's what she was really saying. And that's what the Jewish people did. Have a look with me in verse 19. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keeps the law. Why do you seek to kill me? The other thing Jesus exposes is our hypocrisy. You say you keep Moses' law, but you're trying to kill me. That's not what Moses taught you. You know, everyone quotes Jesus, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. See, I'm a good person. Yeah, but do you keep that? Do you ever do what you say? No, of course not. But that's another subject. But have a look what Jesus says. Verse 20, the crowd answered, you've got a demon. Who's seeking to kill you? Jesus answered them. Now, everyone, this is a little bit hard. But just listen, you're thinking, I brought a friend, and now you're going to talk about circumcision. Awkward. But I'm just going to give, let me show you how it works. So Jesus said to them, I did one work, and you marvel at it. Moses gave you circumcision. Not that it's from Moses, it's actually from the fathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. Now, if on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision, so the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me? Because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well, and you're going, what? Let me explain it to you. Put a background, it's not hard. God gave Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob the fathers, that's what they called it in the Jewish culture, the sign of circumcision. Circumcision just meant that you were part of God's people. It was a sign of salvation. It was a mark that you were special to God. You were part of his people. Okay? That's what circumcision was for. God also gave them a law. The law was the Sabbath. It was part of the Jewish Old Testament covenant. And what the Sabbath was about is that every Sabbath you had to rest on the seventh day in honor of God as creator and redeemer. Now here's the thing. When God gives a law, what do people do? Well, you add a whole lot of laws to it because we're legalists. We love rules and regulations. So what you did was you made all these rules about the Sabbath. So for example, the Jewish people would say, you can wash your hands, okay? See? But if you wash them twice, hey, you're working. You're breaking the Sabbath. Or how about this? You can go for a stroll on the Sabbath. That's cool. That's cool. But if you go past a certain length, you're on a journey. You're breaking the Sabbath. So I've been to Jerusalem. If you go to Jerusalem, you'll see markers where if you walk past that marker, you're on a journey. You're breaking the Sabbath. You know, all these rules and regulations. But the Jews said you can break the Sabbath if a child needs to be circumcised. So then you can break God's law. So they thought. So you have to circumcise a child on the eighth day, and if it falls on the Sabbath, you can circumcise them, even though it's breaking the Sabbath. Now, if you drifted off because you didn't want to hear about circumcision, and I know it's a sore point, come back and concentrate, okay? Now, with that background, listen to what Jesus does. What he's referring to is he goes up to a paralyzed man on the Sabbath because Jesus is so provocative. And he goes up to this paralyzed man on the Sabbath day and he says to him, I tell you, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Now, Jesus is being provocative because why does he tell him to pick up his mat? You're not allowed to carry your mat on the Sabbath day. What's he saying? Oh, look, it's very untidy. I can't bear mats lying about. No. He's provoking the religious people about their rules because their rule is you can't carry your mat on the Sabbath. And so he heals this man and they get angry with him. Now think to yourself, why are you getting angry? This poor dude has been paralyzed his whole life. Jesus heals him and you're getting all uppity about a mat. Get over your little pettiness. Get over your religious rules. And that's why people hate Jesus. The Jewish people hated Jesus because he broke their little rules. Look at what he says. Verse 23. If on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision so that the law of Moses may not be broken. See, you do it as well, right? Are you angry with me because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well? Circumcision pointed to healing of the soul, but I've healed the whole dude. And you're cross because I said, pick up your mat and walk. Now, you're not Jewish, so you're never going to get angry with Jesus for picking up mats. But we do the same thing. We do the same thing. We've got these moral codes, and Jesus has to fit in with our moral codes. I'll give you examples. I can have sex with whoever I want to as long as I'm not hurting anybody. What have you just done? You've got your moral code. And Jesus must fit in with your moral code. Or how about this? I can watch naked women who aren't my wife because it doesn't really affect me. It's not like I go and rape anyone. Oh, you've got your moral code. And Jesus, well, poor guy, he'll just have to fit in with the way you see things. How about this? As long as I don't steal, I can be as greedy as I want to. When I earn lots of money, I'm going to get a very expensive car. Why? Because I'm not stealing. I earned it. Yes, but you've got your own moral code. Jesus says, be generous. Jesus says, don't buy a very expensive car. Buy a cheaper car so you can share. You hear what I'm trying to do? We've got very great ways of making Jesus fit in with our moral code. Oh, look, it's all there. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Let me give you one last example. I'm going to surprise you. Let me surprise you. Last example. You will always have a problem with Jesus if you want him to be fair. Think about that. Think about that. One of the ways you hate Jesus is you want him to conform to your moral code. That's what the Jewish people did. And we do it too. And one of our codes is, Jesus, thou shalt be fair. It's our moral code. See, when I show someone clear teaching in the Bible and they go like this, yeah, but that's not fair. What are you doing? You've got this moral code and Jesus has to fit into it. You're doing exactly what they did in the New Testament. And Jesus would say to you, who are you to judge what's fair or not? I don't conform to you. You conform to me. That's why he says what he says in verse 24. Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. Don't judge me by the way you see things. Don't judge by appearances. I'm 27, so I know everything now. And so I reckon this is the way. Jesus says, don't judge by appearances. Judge with right judgment. And what is right judgment? Well, what Jesus has been saying all along, that he came from the Father and that he speaks the truth. The world hates Jesus. It's not a happy message. But Jesus says people hate him because they love themselves. Jesus says people hate him because they want to rule themselves. And Jesus says people hate him because they want him to conform to their moral code. Now, that's all very negative. Where's the positive? Okay, are you ready? Here's the most important question tonight. What is Jesus' response to a world that hates him? Does he hate them back? What does Jesus do? How does Jesus respond to it? Tonight you're sitting there and you've just been told that your natural inclination is to hate Jesus, which is a very confronting negative message. What's Jesus' attitude to you? And it's mind-blowing. Because what we're going to see right now as we close is that the world that hates Jesus is the world that Jesus loves so much. See all these people who hate Jesus? Jesus loves them. When we hate him, he responds in love. Let me show it to you. Look at verse 6. Jesus said to them, my time has not yet come. Your time's always here. It's your time now. Party on, people. It's not my time. What's he talking about? The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about its works are evil. You go up to the feast. Have a party. That's the feast. I'm not going up. My time. What's he talking about? Is he alarm clocks? It hasn't gone off yet. What's his time? Well, in John's gospel, time means only one thing. The cross. Jesus is saying, my time to go to Jerusalem and die is not yet. But, did you see the contradiction? Oh, Jesus always contradicts himself. Because look at verse 10. But after his brothers had gone up to, then he also went up, not publicly. But did he contradict him? Did he change his mind? No. What's going on here is Jesus is saying, I'm not following your word, my brother consultants. You say go, I don't. You say jump, I don't. The Father says go, and I go. Jesus is saying I'm marching to a different drum beat. I'm listening to my Father. And there's a wonderful pun. Look at verse 8. You go up to the feast. I'm not going up. In John's gospel, going up is purpose ambiguity. In John's gospel, going up is going to the cross. What Jesus is saying is that my time to die isn't yet. And guess what he does, everybody? Hey. Do you go where you're not invited? Someone throws a party and everyone who hates you goes. Do you go? No, of course not. I don't go nowhere where I'm not wanted. But guess what Jesus does? Verse 10. He goes. He's just said they hate me. So what does he do? He goes to them. And why does he go? And you know how the story ends. He goes to be crucified. Jesus goes to Jerusalem to face this hatred. And more, to take that hatred upon himself. He goes not to beat up the baddies. He goes to die for the baddies. On the cross, Jesus absorbed the world's hatred. Think of any religious leader. Quickly think. Can you think of any religious leader who faced such hatred willingly as Jesus did? On the cross, he took our natural born hostility against him. He took it all. But more than that, on the cross, he took the punishment that our hatred deserves. Let me, do you know that God is love? And when you hate, do you think God's okay with that? No, it makes God angry, and he's going to punish us for our hatred. And on the cross, Jesus took that punishment. He took it for us, and he died for us. Jesus Christ died for people who hate him. That is love. And so the message tonight is, yes, I naturally hate Jesus. But I hear that he loves me. And so the thing tonight is to lay down your life. To lay it down. To put down your weapons. To stop hating him because he loves you. Friends, God is not fighting with you. You're fighting with him. When you hear those words, oh, I don't hate Jesus, lay it down. God's not fighting with you. You're fighting with him. Tonight, why not convert? Why not stop being a consultant and become a follower? Why not submit to such extraordinary love? That message that God hates people who love them has the power to turn hating hearts into loving hearts. And that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, why don't you chew on that for a little bit? And maybe tonight you need to just lay it down. Maybe tonight, just we can have a few minutes quiet. Just pray and say, Jesus, yeah, look, I do hate you, but I'm sorry. I want to lay it down. I want to love you more than me. I want you to rule me and not me. I want to conform to your standards and not you to mine. Why don't you pray that? And then I'll pray and we'll take a few questions if there's time. Cool.